This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Juneteenth has been known by many names. Jubilee Day, Freedom Day, Liberation Day, Emancipation Day, and today, a national holiday.
That's U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris talking about Juneteenth holiday today in the United States, commemorating the end of slavery. Details coming up. Also, Ugandan police say they have arrested 20 people in the massacre of 42 people in a school. And three Kenyan soldiers were killed when their vehicle ran over a bomb. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. Ugandan police say they have arrested 20 suspected collaborators of the Rebel Allied Democratic Forces, or ADF, who allegedly killed 42 people in a school Friday night. Halima Atumani reports from Kampala.
Addressing journalists at the Naguru Police Headquarters in Kampala, police spokesperson Fred Enanga revealed security personnel had arrested 20 suspected collaborators of the Allied Democratic Forces rebels. The ADF are militants with ties to the Islamic State group. This comes as Uganda's armed forces continue to pursue the rebels in the areas of the Rwenzururu Mountains and into the Democratic Republic of Congo's Virunga National Park.
We also have the head teacher and the director of school. As part of our inquiries, they need to give us answers to certain questions.
The suspected ADF rebels attacked the Lubiriha Secondary School in Mpondwe, Kasese District Friday night, killing 42 people, including 37 students. According to the police, the attackers set fire to the boys' dormitory and attacked the girls with machetes. The burned bodies of 17 male students were recovered. Six people survived with injuries and are being treated in different hospitals in the country. Even though 25 bodies have so far been examined and identified, only 23 have been handed over to families for burial. The student victims ranged in age from 12 to 25. The Allied Democratic Forces rebels have previously carried out attacks in Uganda. This was the first ADF attack on a school in 25 years. In June 1998, the ADF attacked Kitramba National Technical Institute in the Kabarole district, killing 58 students. At the time, students had locked themselves in a dormitory to avoid being abducted, and the rebels retaliated by setting the dormitory on fire. Nearly 100 students were abducted. The Allied Democratic Forces, whose founder, Jamil Mukulu, has been imprisoned since 2015, operate in the Rwenzururu Mountains in Uganda and the Democratic Republic of Congo. The group has been fighting the Ugandan government since 1996. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
In Africa, opinion is divided about the continent's diplomatic mission to Russia and Ukraine to try to end the conflict in Eastern Europe. Some analysts, though, consider the effort as naive. Darren Taylor reports.
Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky rejected the African delegation's proposal for talks, saying he would not negotiate with Russia before its troops left his country. A day later, Russian President Vladimir Putin described the plan as misguided because it expected him to recognize the sovereignty of Ukraine's borders.
Quite clearly, the mission was found to fail because of the manner in which it was handled.
Before the African leaders left the continent, independent conflict resolution expert Dr. Kingsley Makubela warned they were being too hasty.
When you start having a large number of heads of state who are actually running a negotiation or a peace mission themselves without any prior work done by technocrats and people who are knowledgeable in the conflict, then it creates a problem. By the time they arrive in Moscow, Moscow has made up its mind that they're not going to accept anything from the delegation.
Russia's invasion of Ukraine in February 2022 has caused thousands of deaths and injuries to both sides. It has also driven up world prices for grain and fertilizer, because it has been difficult for the two countries to export. The surge in prices has hit Africa particularly hard. From Makubela's point of view, the Ukrainians treated the leaders from Egypt, Comoros, Republic of Congo, Senegal, South Africa, Uganda, and Zambia with respect. Makubela says Zelensky listened to them attentively, even though the leader of Ukraine ultimately rejected the African roadmap. In contrast, says Makubela, Putin appeared to lecture them about Russian history and arrogantly interrupted the African leaders' presentations. He thinks it wasn't a good move for the Africans to include in their plan that Russia should respect Ukraine's borders. Makubela says he wasn't surprised when Putin insisted that the people of the Ukrainian regions Moscow has annexed were in fact Russians.
They were lost in terms of preparation, the African heads of state. They shouldn't have raised those issues because a certain precedent that had started and recognized by the United Nations itself when Kosovo seceded from Serbia. So they were in uncharted territory. The mission was not properly prepared. In my own view, they should have had a lot of experts who prepared them about the dynamics of these issues and how to phrase and frame them.
However, speaking to journalists in Johannesburg yesterday, former South African President Thabo Mbeki described the African mission as a great initiative. He said it was very premature to brand it a failure.
This African leadership that has gone to Moscow and to Kiev have said that their first task is to listen, because I think it's important that they should understand what the Russian Federation is saying, what Ukraine is saying, to have a full grasp of the issues and matters at issue. I think it's only then that they would be able to elaborate a suggestion from Africa as to what we as Africans think should be done to end the war, to come out of the crisis.
But like many analysts, Makubela doesn't see a way forward for a plan put forward by leaders who aren't taken seriously by either side in the war. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
9 Egyptians have been made their first court appearance in Greece to face smuggling charges in connection with one of the worst shipwrecks of the Greek coast in recent years. The incident has sparked fierce debate and criticism about the Greek Coast Guard and whether it could have prevented the vessel, which was full of migrants, from sinking. Anita Karaseva reports from Athens.
Amid tight security and a police escort, the 9 suspects were whisked to a courthouse to face smuggling and murder charges in a closed-door hearing in the Greek city of Kalamata. Shortly after they arrived, a special prosecutor gave the suspects a 24-hour extension to answer fresh allegations that they also beat and abused hundreds of asylum seekers packed on the ill-fated ship before it capsized last Monday in high seas. 78 people were killed, with up to hundreds more feared missing. All of the suspects, Egyptian nationals between the ages of 20 and 40, have denied the smuggling charges. The suspects said they did not organize the illegal transfer of the migrants who had left Libya intending to go to Italy. Late Sunday, Pakistan arrested 13 people believed to have orchestrated the illegal trafficking of the migrants. By some accounts, as many as 750 asylum seekers were on board the ill-fated boat. Among them, some 200 women and children who had been locked up in the hold of the vessel. For nearly a week since the sinking, Coast Guard vessels have scoured the site of the incident, but hopes of finding survivors beyond the 104 picked up in the early hours after the sinking are extremely slim. The United Nations has called for an independent investigation into what it has called one of the worst maritime tragedies involving migrants. The looming question is whether the incident could have been avoided, and if not, whether more migrants could have been saved. Evangelos Apostolakis, a former Greek defense minister and a former head of the Greek Navy, explains. He says there are international guidelines and protocols allowing for countries to act in international waters. They concern drug trafficking, ships containing dangerous and toxic cargo, and products of crimes. Even if lives are at risk, Apostolakis says, protocols call for assistance, and there is no doubt that some sort of intervention should have taken place. Apostolakis said that while the Coast Guard was responsible for the search and rescue operation, the Navy could have been called in to assist because of what it called its legitimacy and flexibility to act in international waters. With a repeat round of voting due to elect a new government this coming Sunday, the tragedy has suddenly surged to the top of the political debate. Main opposition leader Alexis Tsipras has openly accused the Coast Guard of failing to do enough in the deadly shipwreck. Incumbent Conservative Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis has maintained that the focus of any investigation and international crackdown should be on human smugglers profiting off the migrants' misery. Greece's Coast Guard should not be scapegoated, he said. The Coast Guard has also lashed out at critics who said it approached the vessel in distress on at least three occasions, but that all attempts to help haul it to safety were rejected. Anthi Karasava for VOA News, Athens.
You're listening to African News Tonight on the Voice of America. Three Kenyan Defense Forces KDF soldiers were killed and more than 10 injured when their vehicle ran over an improvised explosive device yesterday in coastal Lamu County. The incident comes a few days after 8 KDF soldiers were killed in a similar attack in Garissa County in Kenya's northeast. Amadou Sen reports from Garissa County, Kenya.
Security officials in Kenya suspect that Al-Shabaab militants were behind the IED attack that killed three Kenyan soldiers and injured 10 police officers Sunday along the Pandaguo route near the vast Boni Forest in Kenya's Lamu County. The KDF soldiers had been sent to rescue police officers who were conducting routine patrols when their own vehicle ran over an explosive. Over a dozen KDF and police were injured in that attack. Security officials declined to respond to VOA's request for a comment. Nairobi-based security analyst Peter Tuya says the increased attacks is Al-Shabaab's response to Kenya's plan to officially reopen the border with Somalia.
The objective here is to make sure that the government does not open up those areas for development, because it will be cutting out the supply line to them. Because for a long time, they have been using the issue of marginalization to recruit people to join their networks.
The incident comes a few days after an IED explosion killed 8 KDF soldiers in Garissa County in Kenya's northeast. Al-Shabaab is suspected in that attack as well. Tuya told VOA via phone that the militant group is targeting security officers to instill fear and force the public to join them.
As they are targeting the security personnel, they want to create fear to the members of the public that, look, if we have the capacity to target the security personnel, what about you? So that they create the environment of fear, so that even the people now there will look helpless and will subscribe to their ideology.
The attacks come at a time when Kenya's security minister Kithure Kindiki made a visit to Lamu and met with area leaders and top security operatives. Speaking to journalists, Kindiki assured Kenyans that they will flush out terrorists from the region.
We will make sure we get and bring down the last terrorist.
Kenya closed the crossing points along its border with Somalia more than a decade ago, but announced the crossings will reopen after talks with Somali officials last month. The border points to be reopened included the Lamu, Garissa and Mandera border crossings. Al-Shabaab has carried out frequent attacks in Kenya since the government began contributing troops to the African Union peacekeeping mission in Somalia in 2011. I'm listening for VOA News, Garissa, Kenya.
The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Volker Turk, warns human rights around the world are in a perilous state as countries are failing to to honor the fundamental rights and freedoms of all peoples as enshrined in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Turk spoke today at the opening of the UN Human Rights Council's upcoming four-week session. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
UN Rights Chief Volker Turk said human rights are the cornerstone of the United Nations, but he added these rights are at a critical juncture because of the self-serving interests of too many governments that are taking precedence over international cooperation to advance human rights. In a sweeping global review of the human rights situation in dozens of countries, the High Commissioner highlighted the many atrocities and crimes being committed in all regions of the world, including Africa. He pointed to egregious cases of abuse and discrimination in countries such as Uganda, which recently adopted legislation criminalizing homosexuality. He criticized Mali's request for the withdrawal of MINUSMA, the UN's peacekeeping mission, saying human rights must always be above the fray of politics. He deplored worsening conditions in South Sudan.
Regrettably, reported violent incidents affecting civilians rose by 12% in the first 3 months of this year, and there has been little action by the authorities to hold perpetrators to account. While senior government officials allegedly implicated in serious crimes remain in office.
Turk lambasted Eritrea for its ongoing refusal to engage with the full spectrum of human rights bodies. Though Eritrea was a current member of the Human Rights Council, he said the government has never allowed the Special Rapporteur on Eritrea or any other independent human rights expert to investigate the prevailing human rights situation in the country. He noted Burundi also is not granted access to or cooperated with the Council's Commission of Inquiry or other investigative bodies since 2016. On the other hand, he said Ethiopia has cooperated with the office, enabling him to send international human rights monitors to the north.
I also note the potential for cooperation on development of a comprehensive transitional justice policy. However, Ethiopia does not engage with the International Commission of Human Rights Experts established by the Council, and I continue to encourage such engagement ahead of its report.
The Commission report on Ethiopia is due to be presented to the Council in September. On a more positive note, High Commissioner Turk said his office's support of Mauritania's efforts to end discrimination, notably the persistent issue of slavery, is bearing fruit. He said at least 38 cases of slavery have been brought to court, with 10 judgments made in the first 2 months of this year. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Today, June 19th, referred to as Juneteenth Day, is a holiday in the United States commemorating the end of slavery. On this day, in 1865, some 2,000 Union troops arrived in Galveston, Texas, and freed the last remaining black slaves there. Congress moved to establish Juneteenth as a federal holiday, June 2021, and the holiday went into effect immediately. The bill, signed into law by President Biden, designated the date as Juneteenth National Independence Day. President Biden hosted a massive concert on the South Lawn of the White House last Tuesday to commemorate Juneteenth, saying it will breathe a new life in the very essence of America. Giving tribute to Juneteenth, here are U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris and President Joe Biden in their own words.
Juneteenth has been known by many names. Jubilee Day, Freedom Day, Liberation Day, Emancipation Day, and today, a national holiday.
Yeah.
156 years, June 19th, 1865. John, thanks for being here. Major General of the Union Army arrived in Galveston, Texas, to enforce the Emancipation Proclamation and free the last enslaved Americans in Texas from bondage. The day, as you all know, and we repeat some of what was said, became known as Juneteenth. You all know that. A day that reflects what the Psalm tells us. Weeping may endure for a night, but joy cometh in the morning. Juneteenth marks both the long, hard night of slavery and subjugation and a promise of a brighter morning to come. This is a day of profound, in my view, profound weight and profound power. A day in which we remember the moral stain, the terrible toll that slavery took on the country and continues to take. What I've long called America's original sin. At the same time, I also remember the extraordinary capacity to heal and to hope and to emerge from those painful moments in a bitter, bitter version of ourselves, but to make a better version of ourselves.
Senegal, West Africa, to St. Louis, Missouri. Thanks to Catherine Dunham for giving my pops his glory. He came down with his crown and a dream to change the world in a free, uplifting world. And that's all he ever want. Mom came a little after, gave birth to my brother. And then all of the pressure made them fight one another. You see, the pain will never lie. Did the best with what they had. He knew the world was out for grabs, and he searched to find his freedom.
Freedom. And today, we consecrate Juneteenth for what it ought to be, what it must be, a national holiday. As the Vice President noted, a holiday that will join the others of our national celebrations, our independence, our laborers who built this nation, our servicemen and women who served and died in its defense. And the first new national holiday since the creation of Martin Luther King Holiday nearly four decades ago. I'm grateful to the members of Congress here today, in particular, the Congressional Black Caucus, who did so much to make this day possible. I'm especially pleased that we showed the nation that we can come together as Democrats and Republicans to commemorate this day with an overwhelming bipartisan support of the Congress. I hope this is the beginning of a change in the way we deal with one another.
Hold on to me. Don't let me go. Who cares what they see? Who cares what they know? Your first name is free. From man's white flower, it's an every living thing. Mind, use your power, still use your wings.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Al Santos, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.